Live from Swansea, this is The Twilight Show with Nathan Ginn.
Borodar Pab, Croeso I Abertawe. Hello everyone and welcome to Swansea. It's The Twilight Show with me, Nathan Ginn, here on Teachers Talk Radio. And tonight we're talking to primary teacher Adam Levick and science teacher Amy Jordan about should teachers dress a certain way? Should we have tattoos? Should we be wearing shorts in all this heat? Tune in. Talk it out.
Live from Swansea, this is The Twilight Show with Nathan Ginn on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live at ttradio.org or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Borodar Pab, Croeso I Abertawe, welcome to Swansea, and it is still muggy and hot here, and I guess that ties into our conversations we are having tonight about how we should be dressing as teachers, or should there be rules about how we should dress as teachers. Now, we've got primary school teacher Adam Levick joining us in the studio to talk about it, and a little bit later on, hopefully, we're going to be joined by science teacher Amy Jordan to give her views on how we should be dressing as teachers and whether there should be any rules. Now, I can see Adam is with us. Adam, can you hear me?
I can indeed. Hello, how are you?
How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. I'm fab. I've had a lovely day. How are you?
Yes, I am good. And I guess maybe it is hot still here. What's the weather like where you are?
Absolutely beautiful. I came home very sweaty from work, so I was very happy to get changed and kind of have a shower and chill out. So it's
well, I guess that kind of takes us on a little bit to our conversation. I think the first thing we should do is maybe if you can give us kind of a little bit of your professional background, I guess, just to set the scene for us about what you do, where you're teaching, so that people can really get an understanding from where each of us are coming from.
Yeah, no problems. So I'm currently in my third year of teaching. I teach a mixed year 5 and 6 class in York. They are absolutely lovely. I'm also a computing PSHE and wellbeing lead. So I'm very big on teachers being able to kind of express themselves, have their own wellbeing and be able to kind of feel safe in their own environments and the environments that they work in. I really, really love like kind of teacher fashion. I'm obsessed with it. I'm so involved with it that I set up my own Instagram about kind of sharing what kind of clothes I wear. And yeah, so I'm relatively new to the profession, but I feel like I'm kind of well established in my school now. And as I teach primary school, it's a very different experience, I imagine, to lots of secondary school teachers.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm in, I guess, a privileged situation myself where I was a primary school deputy. You know, I moved into primary school from secondary for a little bit. Then I moved back out to secondary now. And so this is the really, I guess, the first time in a long time, which might be surprising for some of our secondary colleagues. It's the first time in a long time that I've had a tie on regularly, you know, a suit jacket on. Because as a primary school teacher, even as a deputy, it wasn't something that I naturally had. So if I describe today, for me, I was, and this might shock you, I guess, Adam, you know, if we're talking fashion, it was a grey suit and a navy tie, a white shirt, and that was it. But on a hot, muggy day, you know, that tie around my neck felt tight. So how were you dressed today for work?
Pretty much the complete antithesis.
Go on, tell me.
So I had a white t-shirt on with a hand-stitched Frida Kahlo on because my class is called Kahlo. So I thought, you know, it's nice to kind of show them who she is. I had a pair of smart dress shorts on. So they are navy blue, but they are just cut above the knee. They are smart, though. They're acceptable by my staff's dress code. And then a pair of sandals.
Oh, so like open-toed sandals?
So they're like the Doc Martin ones, so it's got kind of a back to it, two straps over the top, and then a cover just below the toes. But, yep, a couple of my toes are out.
Oh, okay. So I guess, yeah, for a secondary teacher then, I guess that, you know, in most secondary schools, that would be quite surprising. Can I ask, if it's not too personal of a question, any tattoos?
So I personally don't have any tattoos, no.
No. I do. I have them, you know, sort of down my forearms. I have them on my calves. So if I was, you know, dressed as you were dressed today, and in fact, when I was, you know, in primary schools, you would be able to see visible tattoos, you know, available. Obviously, and as I currently dress as a secondary teacher, which is business attire, I would describe it. You can't see my tattoos, so none below the wrist, none on the neck or the face or anything. So, you know, let's talk about then, I guess we'll move up to above the shoulders. So I'm, I guess I get away. I'm not clean shaven, but I don't have a beard, and I have, you know, short cropped hair, little bit of product in it, you know, and that's kind of as far as I go, balding a little bit because of my age, I guess. Any extreme, you know, above the neckline for you? Piercings, colour?
Oh, I'd say I'm quite boring in that respect. I mean, I do have a beard, but yeah. I'm one of these, like, meticulous people that has to kind of trim it every day. I shave my neck. I shave the kind of outlying hairs. Again, I've got very neat hair with product in it. But I do have piercings. So I've got a Daith piercing, which is in the centre of my ear. And I got it because I used to get migraines quite a lot.
Yeah.
So it kind of releases the tension there. And then I've got one above it that's in my ruck, and I've had no problems with it, apart from when one of the children thought it was a hearing aid and asked if I was deaf.
Oh, well, I guess a teaching moment, I guess, though, at least.
It was. It was a it opened up a lovely kind of conversation about kind of the kind of rights of people and things that should be like accessible and why kind of certain people have certain things. But I've had no kind of stick back from piercings, but I guess the piercings I've got are kind of quite safe and hidden. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I guess what I've got a kind of little breakdown for us. And I think, you know, I want to work through kind of our, my questions for you and our discussion points as we go. And I put out a few tweets at the start of the week and, you know, secondary colleagues particularly, and it did seem to be a bit of a split, but, you know, we've got a tweet here and I'll read it to you. This is from Seb Ventura, who's actually one of our hosts on Teachers Talk Radio. But he said he got a lecture once in school, a school that was in special measures, by the head for not wearing a tie. He was a bit late, had it in his pocket, and whilst he was telling me that it wasn't professional, the kids behind him were giving him the finger. So we've got that kind of sets the, I guess, a bit of the tone. We've got Nicole Hollyoak, who put on there, also that she was sent home from school in her NQT year for wearing a strappy top. She, you know, as a female teacher, the exact same top, she says, as an older member of staff was wearing, but she wasn't sent home. And then I'm going to get into just a couple of articles. We have, I guess, the only one that I could find of it really reaching disciplinary was from a while ago. And it's hard to tell. The article itself was from 2012, but I think it predates it. But there was a teacher in London who was sacked for not wearing business attire. He wanted to wear, I guess, what we would call PE kit, you know, trainers and a tracksuit, and he was sacked. This was about 10 years ago. You obviously haven't been, weren't teaching back then. It was kind of right at the start of my career, a lot of these stories. What has been your experience through training, through the schools that you've had contact with, about kind of how people are expected to dress?
I've had a very kind of very mixed experience, and I think it very much depended on the philosophy of the school I was in, depending on how it was kind of approached with me. So during my training, yeah, because I didn't want to put a foot wrong, because you're obviously a very shy, kind of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed individual that kind of wants to do everything right, I was very much kind of, I would wear formal trousers, I would wear shirts, and it's very much not me. I kind of, I don't like that. It's why I couldn't do secondary. It's why I do primary rather than secondary, because I feel quite uncomfortable in it.
Yeah.
And I feel it's like I've always been really interested in what formal attire is for men versus what formal attire is for women, and kind of trying to bridge a gap between them. Because, for example, it's like the Met Gala this weekend, and the kind of the amazing extravagant things that the women show up in versus kind of the black tuxedo, the shirt and trousers that the men show in. So kind of my actual fashion sense is very much trying to kind of bridge the gaps. I'll wear like flared trousers or crop trousers. I'll wear blouses or shirts. I will hardly ever wear a tie. I don't even think I own a tie in this apartment at the minute. But so as a student, I kind of tried to then phase that out as I became an NQT, because as you want to feel comfortable when you're kind of first teaching. You want it kind of, you want your class to see the kind of authentic you and the real you. Because I think if you're trying to build relationships, it's so hard if you kind of feel kind of down on yourself or a little bit like, oh, a bit stuffy, a bit not me. So I kind of brought those things in. And everything I wore, nothing was ever in my eyes or in most of my colleagues' eyes inappropriate. But the first school I worked in, I had two occasions where a member of staff had complained about what I was wearing. And both times it was the same pair of trousers. It was a pair of pink culottes that were kind of low-waisted, and I always had a shirt tucked into them. And it was said to me that it wasn't deemed appropriate because it was too bright, too shocking, and something that a man shouldn't wear.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, that phrase kind of really stuck with me, because I was like, so would it be an issue if a female member of staff were to wear these trousers? Because I'd actually bought them from the kind of M&S female workwear section. So they were being branded as workwear. They were sold as workwear. I obviously bought them as workwear. So it was kind of a very strange kind of approach to it. And obviously when you're at NQT, any setback that you get, you take to heart, you take it really personally. So I kind of was like, oh, what do I do? And my lovely TA at the time, and I cannot thank her enough, basically said to me, she was like, your individuality is what makes you such a good teacher. It's what the kids really warm to. It's how the relationships have really built. So don't ever lose that. And kind of you've had one complaint of the same member of staff twice. So never really think about that. And then in my new school, it's kind of the way I dress has really been embraced, to the point where I've helped to kind of rewrite the new dress code policy to make it more equal. I've kind of removed men should, women should, to just everybody should. Because I think male and female staff should be held to the same standard, and we should be held to some form of professional standard, but we shouldn't kind of pick and choose or cherry pick kind of what men should adhere to and what women should adhere to, because in like our modern world, it's not as black and white to be men should do this, women should do this, because there are millions of people that maybe don't fit within that binary, or maybe feel that some days they might feel one way and some days they might feel another way. So it's kind of, it seems almost archaic in a way to kind of force this boundary on people through a dress code. So I think it, for me, it's very much dependent on the environment I'm in. And I think when I've been allowed to kind of dress the way I want to and feel a lot more comfortable within the classroom, I definitely know my teaching has improved. I know that my relationships with the kids has improved, which means my behavior management has improved. So I think that's been my experience, really. Kind of, I finally found a groove where I feel comfortable, and it's made me into a better teacher, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly sounds like that you kind of, you know, you kind of blossomed, I want to say, or have found your feet in that. For me, you know, grey suit man, probably won't surprise you that when I changed my style, and I was very much like you, I think, you know, that NQT year, the teacher training in particular, I remember people saying to me, you know, oh, you know, you've got to wear a tie, make sure it's smart, got to look smart, you know, and all of those things. And I remember that sort of coming through. And an early years environment where I taught for some of it, even any primary environment, is a suit is not a great piece of work clothing, was my feeling on it. So it wasn't necessarily from a fashion sense, but it was from a comfort sense, from a feeling comfortable and confident in myself that I wasn't kind of, you know, hitching up my tie or tucking it in or dipping it in paint or anything like that. And then certainly I went, I guess, the opposite way as I got into leadership. And maybe this is, you know, the role of a deputy in a school or the role of, you know, certain people in a school. But, you know, as a deputy head in a small primary school, sometimes I was fixing toilets. Sometimes I was carrying in the county supplies order. Sometimes I'd be outside teaching outdoor learning in the morning in the woods. And then I'd be on the carpet in year R in the afternoon. And a three-piece suit for me just made me feel, I don't know, uncomfortable, I guess. You talk about, I guess, your fashion, the fashion choices that you've made. Do you see a functionality in what you're wearing as well? Is that a factor into it as well?
Oh, 100%. I think, especially with primary, because you're constantly getting up and down, you're constantly crouching over, you're constantly kind of having to check like scrapes and bruises in the playground. You're getting involved with, say, art or drama or PE or whatever it is. So I always go for like quite flowy trousers because I can move in them easily. And I think if I had a formal suit on and a tie on, it's not practical in a primary school environment at all. And like you said, especially when you're in a small school, so I'm in quite a small school, your role varies day to day depending on what you've been asked to do. And a suit, you can't do it all in a suit. It's too restrictive. And then as soon as you take that blazer off and you undo the tie, it's almost like, well, what was the point of me wearing them anyway? So yeah, I do think comfort and functionality definitely play a role. It's like I live in trainers or sandals, for example. I hardly ever wear proper shoes. And if I am wearing what's deemed as proper shoes, I'd wear Doc Martens or boots. So again, and it's that case of, because I'm on my feet constantly, I'm bending up and down, I'm running down corridors, I'm doing playground duty, I'm doing PE, and it's easier, it's more practical, and it means that I'm not losing learning time to kind of swap shoes over or to go and change at lunchtime, and I'm actually enjoying my lunch break. So I would definitely say, especially in a primary school environment, functionality is so, so important with what you wear.
Okay, so I'm going to go through a couple of the arguments. I know we've both kind of fallen on the same side of this argument. So, I've got some sources, some articles about where it came from. Now, from the comments we've had, and it'd be really interesting if you're listening, if you want to call in and let us know, if you've been teaching a little bit longer than Adam, a little bit longer than me, and you remember what the expectations were, because we have had people texting in and tweeting us saying that back in the 80s, it was teachers in jeans. But I found one of the mentions of the start of this, and one of the articles on the test that talked about it was talking about when Sir Michael Wilshaw took over Mossbourne Community Academy in Hackney in 2004, or it opened it. It was a new school, and he insisted that staff must be dressed in business formal wear. And certainly in another article that I found, there was a head teacher called David Sashnell, who said that the dress code when he was head at Cowes High School, he wanted a clear standard of professional, and these words keep coming up, teachers are professionals, and there are conventions and standards of dress that go with that. It said in their staff handbook that staff are expected to dress in keeping with their professional status and set an example of a professional to a student. Teachers are expected to dress formally. So I guess that kind of takes us on to, I guess, and as I say, if you are listening in and you have a point from maybe you were teaching in the 80s or the 90s, because it does seem to be around the 2000s that there was a bit of a shift in this. Adam, I guess the question I'm asking you is, do you feel like a professional? Do you think you're giving the show of a professional in the way you dress?
I'd like to think so, yes. I think this idea of a professional is a very kind of classist idea for me, because in my head, anybody that has a job is a professional person. So if you're working in a shop, whatever you're wearing, you're therefore wearing as a professional. Whatever you're wearing, say if you're in a fast food restaurant, if you're a waiter or a waitress, if you're a barman, any kind of career for me is a profession, and therefore however you dress, as long as it's appropriate to your place of work, is dressing as a professional. And I would say kind of a lot of the clothes I wear are very akin to what you would see retail staff wearing, for example, on the high street. And I think this idea of this business dress or professional dress, it's very rooted in this idea that you have to wear a suit and tie, you have to kind of be along the echelons of working in corporate kind of environments or being like an investment banker. It's that idea of that certain professions are therefore better, in air quotes, because they dress like this, or because they're a better kind of deemed career. But I think that's quite a dangerous path to go down in terms of like your kind of dress codes and things, because it does open up this paradox of you're therefore saying that these jobs are not professional, because of the way they dress. And I think it's in, especially linguistically at the minute in society, we're kind of seeing a great big shift towards kind of trying to be inclusive to everybody, trying to encompass as much as we can. That's quite a kind of exclusive way of looking at the world, I would say. And I think it should be opened up a bit more to say, well, if you're saying this is professional, then why aren't these range of careers seen as professions?
Yeah, and you know, the thing that really surprised me about it is that how late this change was. It being in the sort of 2000s is what it seems to be. And again, it, you know, if you were teaching before that, please let us know. Text in, call in, let us know what you were wearing as a teacher in the 90s. Because I was expecting, whilst researching this, to find out that it was, you know, in the 80s, in the yuppie, power suits, Wall Street kind of era, that this changed. And it was a global fashion change, that everyone was suddenly dressing like a yuppie and everyone was wearing suits for everything because that was the fashion trend. But it really seems to be, you know, a lag a lot later. You're right, I guess. I think when I think about the profession, when I try and frame it, I try and think about what would I expect a doctor to wear? And what would I expect, you know, someone with similar training to wear, a lawyer to wear? And I start kind of running up against this kind of issue between, I guess, trying to compare professions, which I guess is a little what you're describing. If you were walking into the doctor's surgery, and okay, so maybe, you know, I hesitate because I think I already know the answer. Would you feel comfortable and confident if you went into, you know, see a consultant at the hospital and they were dressed as you dress to teach?
I think my answer is probably quite obvious. I kind of, when I see people dressed, as long as kind of the relevant parts of the body are kind of covered and it's censored to an appropriate level for being out in society, I don't think in my head it really matters what you wear. Like, there's obviously certain things in my wardrobe that I would never wear to school because I either wear them because they're slightly dressier and I wear them to kind of go out and socialise with people, or there are things that maybe are too casual. But I think as long as someone could carry out the job safely, first of all, so they're not wearing like ridiculously high heels or they're not wearing things that would maybe put them or myself in danger, I don't think in my head it really matters because they've clearly got the training. They're clearly in a position for their work and their kind of their actual hard work. They've earned their spot to be there. They've worked to get there. So I think in my head, it doesn't really matter. So I know even I went to the doctors before and I walked in and my doctor was just in black jeans, brown Chelsea boots and like a pink top. And I was like, that's similar to what I'd probably wear to school. So in my head, it was like, yeah, it's absolutely fine because they're there to do a job at the end of the day and they're wearing something that allows them to do that job kind of in a manner that they feel comfortable in, but also in a manner that it doesn't prevent them from doing anything. So I would say I would be happy if I walked into a doctor's surgery and saw the doctor wearing pretty much the same thing as me.
Okay, we've had a text in and it's from Dorian in the chat and just saying that if we expect our students to wear a tie, I would wear a tie. Otherwise, I'd much prefer the comfort and freedom of no tie. We also have from Dom Thomas texting in as well, saying, I'd have a problem with black jeans and brown boots. Now, we are going to go to an ad break, so I'm going to leave those two questions sitting there because when I come back from the ad break, I want us to talk about if students can't express their individuality, should teachers be allowed to express their individuality? So that's going to be where my question when we come back, kind of answering Dorian's question a little bit there as well. Is that okay, Adam?
That is fine and dandy.
Okay, well, I will see you on the other side of the ad breaks then.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.cre8tiveresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TTRadio. Creative resources made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club. Live from Swansea, this is The Twilight Show with Nathan Ginn on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live at ttradio.org or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Welcome to Swansea. You have found us on Teachers Talk Radio this evening with fashionable teacher Adam Levick putting me to shame with his pink culottes. And we are talking about should teachers dress a certain way. Now, before we went to the ad break, we had a couple of texts in, one from Dorian saying, you know, if students are expected to wear a tie, I would wear a tie. Another from Dom Thomas 76 saying, I'd have a problem with black jeans and brown boots. Evening Genevieve in the texting us in. And Dorian just texting in as we speak saying, I think tie wear should be a choice. Making it mandatory is a bit archaic. Now, my question for Adam in a second is going to be, if students can't express their individuality, why should teachers be allowed to? And I'm going to start that off with a tweet that was put out today by Kirsty Stubbs, goes by Tattooed Head Teacher, saying that I've been contacted again by a member of staff in a school who has had to wear thick tights today to cover a tattoo on their leg. And she says, come on, leaders, we're not teaching children individuality. Do tattoos really cause that much offence, or to non-tattooed people, does it make them lesser? And whilst I don't want to get stuck on tattoos, Adam, your kids are in uniform. We're expecting them to dress a certain way. They're not expressing their individuality. Why should teachers be doing it?
I think, obviously, secondary school is very different because the kind of uniform expectations are a lot different. But I know in primary, although there's a set uniform, it's a bit more fluid. So for example, girls can wear a blouse or a skirt. They can then choose to wear tights or socks. They could wear a checkerboard dress if they want to. And then boys can wear a polo shirt. They could wear a proper shirt. They can wear a jumper. They can wear trousers or shorts. And again, they can wear different types of socks. And I know in my school, we let them wear trainers, provided they are black trainers. So I think in primary school, there's certain parameters are given to the children, but they can wear their interpretation or their version of it, or rather a lot of the time their parents' version of it. And I think it's the same as a dress code for staff. It should be that. There should be parameters that are set out that you have to kind of work within, but you should still be given a range of options. It shouldn't be limited just to this kind of suit, tie, shirt, etc., because especially in primary school, we don't limit the children to that. So then why are we limiting, especially secondary school colleagues, to it?
Yeah, and you know, whilst I don't want to get hung up on, I guess, tattoos being an issue, but I think there is, you know, possibly within that and within some of the stories you've already shared with us about kind of how you feel about dressing and being yourself, there is, I don't want to say generational, because I'm not sure it is necessarily generational, but there is, you know, and I don't want to say kind of classist, because I don't know really if it's that either, but certainly when I started teaching, I was in the same situation as the teacher in that tweet, where I would, on a hot day, be wearing a t-shirt under a white shirt so that my tattoos didn't show through. You know, I'd be wearing a long sleeve kind of t-shirt some days, even if I was wearing a polo shirt to work in a primary school, to cover up those tattoos. And we've had a comment in here. I'm afraid user, you know, wipe V2WC58 saying surely tattoos shouldn't be an issue unless they're inappropriate. And what was really interesting, and I think we did put out a poll on this, and I believe it was, you know, around only around 25% of the people who responded said that they knew for sure that their school allowed tattoos. Dorian saying, slippery slope, what is inappropriate? Now, Adam, you said you'd just been through a process of rewriting, I guess, your school's or looking at your school's staff dress code policy. How did you avoid that slippery slope then? Was it very lots of description, a long list of things, or was it general and generic?
The first thing I want to say about tattoos is, don't quote me this because I might be spouting absolute rubbish, but I'm certain the act of tattooing has been around longer than the act of formal education. So it kind of blows my mind that we police this thing that's been going on for millennia, when actually formalized education is something relatively new in comparison. So that one kind of really gets me. But no, I do agree with the comment that tattoos should be fine as long as they aren't inappropriate. And I think we set out certain parameters to say things as long as they weren't offensive, as long as they didn't kind of depict or promote anything that was deemed violent. And we went down that route. We kind of linked it to the kind of ideals we hold as a school, but also looking at what people may find offensive and kind of trying to find a catch-all scenario for anything that might come under things that are offensive, so that things that aren't necessarily offensive were permitted. So, for example, there's a colleague I used to work with who had a tattoo of a whale. And she used to work with this lovely little boy who sometimes had problems to express himself. And they'd really struggled to build a relationship until her whale tattoo was on show. And it turns out he had a real fascination with whales. And that opened up this conversation and allowed them to build this kind of connection with each other, build this relationship. And that child then went from strength to strength, because he'd finally kind of bonded with somebody. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of, if we're banning tattoos carte blanche, you kind of shut off this situation where things like this may actually be possible and happen. And like you said, if you're constantly covering these tattoos, especially if it's a really hot day like today, it kind of, you're then not going to be on your A game per se, because you're kind of, you've got this back thought of, well, I'm really warm, I'm really uncomfortable. You might be a little bit more agitated. You might kind of be a bit more snappy, or however your mood is affected by the hot weather. And then it doesn't create an environment where every teacher can kind of be the best version of themselves, as so many schools kind of have as their kind of mission statement. And you then, your dress code should match your mission statement. It shouldn't contradict it. So that's when we tried to write ours. We tried to do it along those lines to kind of make sure it fit in with everything.
Sorry, Adam, I'm just writing that down. Your dress shirt code should match your mission statement. Now, I'm going to read out a tweet to you that we've just had in. I guess it epitomizes that for me and the different contexts that schools are working in. Your dress code should match your mission statement. So this is from No Dodgy Pedagogy on Twitter. And they are saying that they had this very conversation, this very conversation as part of a PGCE induction today. With students saying the reasons for formal attire, role modelling a standard, pupils expected to wear blazers and ties, so this is a secondary colleague we're talking about, raising aspirations of learners who may never have seen adults in formal attire before. And also she's mentioned their health and safety. But I think if my school mission statement, and particularly I'm guessing secondary at this level, is to raise aspirations, to show people, again, I'm trying not to use this word professional, but to show them a formality that maybe they haven't seen in their lives, possibly, you know, there is a place for suits, I'm starting to think there. How would you feel about that? If you're, you know, as a primary school teacher, your mission statement is for sure often caring, finding the whole child, growing them, developing them. If your secondary mission statement is to, you know, set high expectations, is there a place for a more formal attire from your staff?
Oh, I can totally see the argument, to be fair. I think it's hard for me to comment on because they kind of, in my head, the job of a secondary school is very different to the job of a primary school, and kind of the approaches of secondary school are very different to primary school. And although there is some overlap, especially between Upper Key Stage 2 and kind of Year 7 and 8, I suppose it depends on, yet, like you said, what you want the school to be. If it is building those aspirations, I suppose it depends what we want them to aspire to.
Yes.
And if they've never seen those formal attire, maybe instead of expecting teachers to maybe model that, show them this, get them out into the world, take them to go and observe a law court, take them to kind of spend some time in a doctor's surgery, rather than kind of, because I remember when I was at school in secondary, you kind of had the token week in year 10 of work experience, and that was your only experience of careers outside of the kind of four walls of a classroom. So I think it should be up to the teacher, and if they would like to and they feel comfortable, because I know a lot of people kind of do the power dress thing, where they choose to kind of wear a suit because it makes them feel more confident, it makes them feel more like a professional. And if that's your bag, go ahead and do it. But I think we're modelling a profession where children should ultimately feel kind of safe. And sometimes, I know, especially myself growing up, I kind of gravitated more to the female teachers because the kind of the formal suit would put me off. It would put me kind of on edge a little bit because it felt a little bit clinical, or it felt a little bit like there wasn't a warmth to it. Whereas a lot of the female teachers would be in, say, trousers and a blouse. I kind of felt more drawn to that because it seems more open. And like with me being a primary school teacher, our main mission obviously is caring for them, forming this whole child, letting them express themselves and learn who they are. That's kind of the approach. That's kind of the way I dress because of the way I dress, to kind of be that open, friendly individual. So I can totally see the argument for secondary school. I just think we could be doing more to show them these other professions outside of the classroom in a slightly different way.
Yeah, we've got another comment here, and I just want to mention it. It's from WIPV2WC58 in the texted in, saying, I'm on a TT course. I'm guessing teacher training course currently, and there are trainees that have been told if they don't remove tattoos or piercings, they may go into schools and be told that they're not allowed in. I think there are some, we will get into, I guess, a little bit, and after our kind of news, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the legal parts around it. But I have certainly, I guess, heard, and whether this is on the teacher grapevine or not, that there are schools that are stricter than others. Have you heard stories about sort of, you know, schools that have particularly strict expectations within your area?
I mean, I've definitely heard the horror stories. I remember the first day of my PGCE, we were told something very similar, but it was more phrased along the line of, it is at the school's discretion, so maybe contact the school beforehand. So it was a little bit strange because a lot of the cohort we had very kind of brightly coloured hair, lots of tattoos, piercings and stretches and things. And then I remember coming back when you kind of been on placement one and you regroup again, and a lot of that individuality had kind of filtered out a little bit because they'd clearly been told by the school, you can't have that, please don't do that, it's not appropriate. And I think it's you obviously you hear the worst case scenarios and you're not sure how kind of viable or true they are, because you tend to hear it through a grapevine from someone who knows someone who knows someone.
Mm.
And obviously those stories tend to be exaggerated. But I've definitely heard cases of people that have been sent home from work for wearing kind of a top that maybe isn't appropriate. So like spaghetti straps, I've heard of someone being sent home from work for. I've heard someone being told to change their trainers into school shoes or proper shoes, even though they were teaching PE that day. So I think every school is different and every school has what works for them, and what works in one school won't necessarily work in another school. And I totally understand that. But I think sometimes, like you said about the tweet earlier about the person who was told to get a time, it was unprofessional while a student was behind them doing a rude gesture. You've got to get your priorities straight. And sometimes a priority is bigger than what a member of staff is wearing, especially if it's something minuscule like a tie.
Yeah, I mean, I find it really interesting as a thing, because when I, you know, my approach, my attitude towards uniform, I think still is in a very primary mindset. I still like, I guess, what you know, the way you described school uniform being of, it's a choice of options rather than a one thing. You have to wear this piece of uniform. I'm still, I guess, very much in that primary where you might have, as you say, one girl in a gingham dress, one in trousers, one in my language for fashion, you know, a jumpsuit, you know, you'd have different variations on the same color theme. And Barbara there, hi, listening from Ghana. Lovely to have an international listener there. It'd be lovely to hear, actually, Barbara, if you were able to sort of tell us a little what teachers dress like. What's the expectation on teachers' dress in Ghana? That would be lovely to hear it kind of from an international point of view. Now, we've got a caller in. I'm just going to try and connect them. MPH, hard to say there. Oh, and I think they've just disappeared. Alex from Wolverhampton, if staff are allowed other clothing, would it be fair not to allow students? Yeah, and I think this is where we get down to this secondary debate. Ah, M thinks, is it? You've just joined us live in the studio. Are you there? We can hear you. Are you there, M thinks? Okay, if you want to try and call... Oh,
can
hello.
You hear me?
I can hear you.
Ah, it's Amy, actually. I don't know why it's come up as M Sinks, but yeah.
That's fine. Sometimes I think it generates a name for you. Amy, welcome. Amy, you're a science teacher. Do you want to give us just a little bit more kind of background, and then we'll join in again. Barbara, who's in, texting in, I was just asking as well, if you want to message us and just say, how do teachers dress in Ghana? What's the expectation there? Is it suits and ties? Is it formal? Is it more relaxed? But while that's happening, Amy, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Right, so I'm head of science and head of chemistry at a medium-sized independent school, which is an all-through school in southeast London.
Ah, perfect. Well, you have joined us. We've got Adam as well. Adam, Amy. Adam is a primary school teacher. We were just talking. I am primary, moved into secondary. We've had a tweet in saying that, and this is from a secondary perspective, the reasons for formal attire are role modelling a standard. Pupils are expected to wear blazers and ties, raising aspirations of learners who may never have seen adults in formal attire before. What are your feelings on staff dress codes?
Yeah, I think they're really, really important. And I think, again, you know, we are role modelling for students what will be expected in most formal settings. So, yeah, I think it's really, really crucial. And one thing actually that came up today with me and my colleagues where we were discussing about the difference between male and female dress codes. So I'm not sure whether you've talked about this already, but that's something that I think we need to discuss at some point.
Yeah, no, certainly. We've talked a little bit, you know, only about strappy tops possibly being an issue. But yeah, again, with, you know, two men as fashion conscious as Adam is, it is a little male heavy. What do you mean the difference between male expectations and female expectations on dress sense?
Yeah, so I think it's very clear for a man. You know, you're in a suit, you've got your tie, you with the top button done up, but for a woman it's much more loose. So, for example, in my school, there are females who dress more casual smart, and there are some that dress super smart. So I think it's just trying to level out the playing field there. And I do think men and women, obviously they're going to wear different types of clothing, but it needs to be the same, because I think we need to show the girls in school that men and women, despite their differences, should be held to the same standards. And I think sometimes that's not always the case in schools, which is a shame.
Adam, what's your experience of primary school settings? Do you think that men and women, there are different expectations on them?
I mean, I totally agree that we should all have the same standards applied to us. So when we, as I was saying earlier, when we rewrote our dress code, we changed male staff and female staff to all staff, because I think all staff should have the same expectations placed on them. I think primary school, it tends to be a bit more lax compared to secondary school in terms of what's expected. But for example, I wore shorts today and a lot of my female colleagues were in dresses. Now, I personally wouldn't feel comfortable enough to wear a dress to school because it's just not me. But I think having the option to wear a dress, say if I wasn't allowed to wear shorts, I probably would have gone out and bought a dress or a skirt or something, because with it being so warm, I didn't want to be in whole trousers. But I totally agree that a lot of, especially, I think the reason why I've kind of enjoyed it is because in primary school, there's never such a set boundary of what is and isn't considered professional. You kind of have to make your own judgment. I've kind of thrived under that. Whereas I can see in a secondary school environment, with it being so black and white for a male and not so much for a female, it does create a discrepancy. And I think, especially as teachers, you should all be singing from the same hymn sheet. So we should all have the kind of, we're either all dressing one way or we're all dressing another way, regardless of our gender.
Yep. And Amy, there was a brilliant thing that I think, I really loved that Adam said earlier, that was your dress code should match with your mission statement. And I really like that as a kind of definition between the differences between primary and secondary schools, maybe, that this idea that, you know, actually, if you are a school that is about, you know, finding the whole child, particularly primary schools, and I don't want to kind of stereotype them, but, you know, there's a lot more of that freedom of expression there. Whereas in a secondary school, you may, like our tweet I read out earlier from No Dodgy Pedagogy, be that you are looking to raise aspirations, to prepare them for a high aspirational workplace. Do you feel your dress code at your school, or feel free to talk about other schools if you don't want to talk just personally about yours, do you feel your dress code matches your mission statement for your school?
Well, I think our dress code is not set in stone as it could be, but I would imagine that most people have an idea that it should be business wear. And I think if it is business wear, I think that does match our aspirations. And I think for secondary, it certainly should be like that for men and women. Primary, I can understand, might be a bit more loose because you might be playing with students. There might be more messy things going on. And again, the same in secondary. Perhaps if I was an art or DT teacher, I might think on some days I might wear less formal clothing, for example. But again, you know, we are trying to show the students that, you know, going forward in the future in the workplace, this is how you're expected to dress. And I think it should be about modesty for women, which I know might be a controversial statement, but role modeling what we're expecting. And for men, again, being modest and, you know, being very formal in business attire.
Okay, now I'm going to put out a question to both of you. We've had a reply from Barbara texting in just saying that teachers in Ghana are supposed to dress in a decent formal attire. Also, most people wear their traditional cloth attire on Fridays as it's considered an official day. I quite like that, actually, kind of as a kind of meet in the middle, that we would have one day that was a formal day. I think my question for you both, before we have to go for the news, is going to be about hairstyles and haircuts. Now, I myself have had all different kinds of haircuts. I've been sort of shaved skinhead, I guess you would call it, down to a grade one. but I was specifically told, not by my school, but by a colleague who worked at a different school, that when I had what was is called a skin fade, so down to zero by the ears and then faded up, that I wouldn't be allowed that as a member of staff at the school they worked in, which was a secondary school, because they considered it an inappropriate haircut, anything below a grade three, I think it was. What would be your feeling on, I guess, the policing of staff haircuts? Let's go to Adam first.
Oh, that's a tricky one. I think in my experience, so I went through a phase in sixth form where I dyed my hair every colour under the sun possible. And I actually killed my hair at one point. It was horrible. And I think I'd never seen anyone like me growing up. So I'd never seen a model that was kind of quite queer, quite out there, very comfortable in themselves. And so I think because I'd never seen that, I didn't know what to model it on, and therefore went through this weird kind of experimentational phase. And it set my identity back, I think, because I was trying desperately to find who I thought I was, because I'd never seen anyone to look up to that kind of was a bit wacky, was a bit out there with what they wore and what they did. And so I think it would have saved my hairdresser the job of shaving all my hair off, and my mum a lot of anguish at the very Schwarzkopf kind of bright coloured hair dyes that I kept purchasing, if I had seen that. So I think they should be freer, but that's purely coming from my kind of personal experience, because all I'd really seen was kind of the atypical people that kind of we see day in, day out in the world. I'd never seen anyone with like bright red hair, bright purple hair in a school environment. And I think it would help children, especially LGBT plus children, or children that maybe kind of identify as a bit out of the box or as a bit kind of different and beat to their own drum. I think it helps them to see adults, especially in a teaching environment, that are like them or are someone that they might aspire to be, and kind of making it normal. Like so many sci-fi shows you watch in the future, you see kind of it's normalized within society, like Fifth Element, for example. They've all got crazy hairstyles and crazy colors. And I think if we are getting to this point in the future, why not be the models now to show them that, you know, these people do exist in the world. We're not living in such a sheltered kind of everyone is a blonde, a brunette or a ginger anymore, and kind of embrace it, embrace who people are, and let people explore their own identity and not have to do it in a condensed window in sixth form and kind of kill your hair, but actually just embrace it and see it happen in a school environment, because we are role models for children. But why can't we be role models who show them that it's okay to express yourself?
So Amy, what would be your sort of, I guess, response to a staff member who wanted maybe not quite as extreme as some of the hairstyles Adam's described, but a fairly smart, you know, I would say I looked good, you know, with it. It wasn't a fully shaved mohawk or anything. It wasn't brightly coloured, but it was certainly against what the children would have been allowed.
So I'm going to disagree with Adam slightly here, which might be a bit controversial. I think I do think it should be completely loose. I think in terms of hairstyle, so I'm mixed race, so I've got afro hair, and I think, you know, absolutely any hairstyle is fine. If a man wants to have long hair, if they want to have plaits, I think as long as it's neat, whatever the hairstyle is, I think that's fine. If they want to shave it all off, again, I think that's fine, because we want to be modelling what the students could have. The one thing I think I disagree with is the colour. So I do think we should stick to natural hair colours. I think that is, does, you know, in terms of business attire, I don't think that if I went to work with blue hair in the city, I don't know if that would necessarily be accepted. So I think if we're modelling to the students what we expect in terms of business attire, that's the only one I disagree with. But I think we should be open to every hairstyle. And I do agree, you know, they should see men with long hair. They should see women with short hair, and, you know, afro hairstyles or straight hairstyles. We want to model that and show that.
And I guess, you know, for me, when I hear both of you talk about it, and I feel, I guess, a little torn between two worlds, being a primary and a secondary teacher. In the studio there, Genevieve is saying, yeah, definitely agree with, my school now has a LGBTQ plus forum that has allowed them to express their thoughts on issues like that. And she's loving the comments about Afro hair. I think you've both kind of touched on this idea where I'm kind of feeling that if we can model, you know, how to look professional in a certain way, and I think, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Adam, but it sounded like if you'd seen someone who was modeling how to do that well, how to look good, how not look good maybe is the wrong word, but how to look smart whilst also expressing themselves, then there might have been an opportunity there. What do you think, Adam?
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what I'm saying. The only people I suppose I'd seen with those kind of more out there hairstyles were things like fashion shows or on like things like RuPaul's Drag Race, for example, where it is very much a creative expression rather than a professional environment where it's done kind of well and within the boundaries of what is and isn't acceptable. So I think, yeah, if I'd have seen it presented well, definitely would have saved a lot of money on hair dye.
Well, we've got a couple more comments coming in, and I do know we've got to go to the news in a second. And when we come back, we're getting into the real nitty gritty, I guess, of your boss has, you know, can tell you what to do. But Barbara, who is listening from Ghana, has said, in my schools, kids are allowed to do whatever they want with their hair, as long as it doesn't distract them and they keep it decent. We've seen some pretty interesting hairstyles and colours. Barbara, it'd be interesting to hear what age you teach. And we've got Charlotte Giel, who's a message saying just a different view from me about hair being in the work world. I work in a corporate job and have had to go into lawyers' offices for meetings in London with pink hair, and it was never a problem. Lucy Brown has just texted in saying, is the 21st century gone of the days of old elitist rule? Surely now more accepting and inclusive society, we should let go of this business attire. Now, I really think, we're hitting on something, and that's why we're going to go to the news and have a little ad break. But when we come back, I have this question for both of you. And it's not so much of a question, it's a statement of we employ you, so we decide what you should wear. Dorian said earlier in the texted in saying that other jobs have uniform expectations, so your employer should have that. Are you both okay to stick around till after the news?
Yeah, sure.
Lovely. Well, we will see you on the other side, and we'll be talking about whether your boss has a right to say what you are wearing for work. So off we go to the news, and we'll see you on the other side.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News with Megan Goods.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News. A new report published in The Guardian this week has highlighted a rise in extremist views and conspiracy theories amongst pupils in England. Interviewers from UCL's Institute of Education interviewed teachers, 50% of whom said they had heard far-right views expressed in their classrooms. 90% had also heard vaccine-related conspiracy theories. 75% had heard Islamophobic or misogynistic views, and almost all of the interviewed staff had heard racist language in school. The report comes as 13% of terrorism-related arrests in the last financial year were of those aged 18 or under, up from 5% on the previous year. Young people under 24 also made up almost 60% of extreme right-wing terror arrests. Oakwood High School, a West London secondary, is rolling out a series of socialisation lessons to help students following the pandemic restrictions. The sessions will include sitting students together at lunch, bonding activities, and extracurricular clubs to help students find like-minded friends. Students will also be offered counselling if they need support with their mental health, and a buddy from an older year group. The head, Mr. Cowling, said, "As a school and community, we must do all we can to help our young people get back on the right track, both emotionally, socially, and academically." That was your latest Teachers Talk Radio News.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful, and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club. Live from Swansea, this is The Twilight Show with Nathan Ginn on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Brada Paub, Kroiso Yabatawi. Hello everyone, welcome to Swansea. I'm here with Adam and Amy, and we are talking about should teachers dress a certain way. Now I did say just before we broke for the news there that we would be coming back to talk about your school employs you, so they get to decide, and whether that is a good attitude, I guess, whether that should be the way. What I wanted to start us off with, though, is something I tweeted out earlier, and this was from a little while ago, I should say, but there was, back around 2010, I think it was, Adrian Swain, who was a teacher of maths and PE in the East End of London, had been dismissed for refusing to dress like a businessman, in his words. Now, it was, I believe, I guess overturned is the correct word for it, but it was challenged, and but it did happen. And we had stories, I guess, of people being sent home from work, where being told that they weren't dressed appropriately. We've just had a message in from Genevieve saying, as a head of a sixth form, there's something special about seeing sixth formers walking into the building in business attire. And I guess that ties in, I guess, with No Dodgy Pedagogy's tweet into us earlier saying that, you know, if our goal is to set aspirations high, then we should be modelling that. So we are back with our guests in the studio, Adam and Amy. My question for you, I guess, is at what point, how do we approach it? I mean, is it good? Is it inclusive? If we are, I don't want to, you know, I try not to use this word professional. If we are trying to, you know, businessman, I don't know what quite how to word it. If we are expecting suits and ties from our staff, is that good for staff welfare? Adam, let's start with you.
Well, I think you've summed up my thoughts really well there by struggling to define it. Because as I was saying earlier, like, what is a professional? To me, a professional is just anyone with a career, anyone with a job. And I think not to, like, I'm not saying it is classist, but it does kind of create a hierarchy of saying you have to aspire to this because it's wrong to therefore not aspire to it. And I think sometimes, especially in primary school, that can send the wrong message, because obviously in primary school, we're just trying to encourage them to kind of work out who they are, learn out what they're like, learn out, kind of find out how they want to be and what they want to do. So it's not for us to say, you should aspire to be this, but you shouldn't aspire to be this, because that's not professional. And I think it's a very kind of dodgy ground to potentially go down. And especially referring to the comment from, I believe she was called Charlotte earlier, to say she works in the corporate world and had pink hair. It's kind of, the world is changing in my eyes. And obviously, like, so I went to school in the noughties and during the like last decade. So I kind of have seen this shift firsthand with the kind of people I grew up with. And a lot of them went off and got very kind of highfalutin jobs. And the dress codes have changed from what I remember them being. It's a bit more fluid and loose now. So I think to define something as business wear is incredibly difficult. And it was like what Amy touched on earlier, to say that the male kind of standard was really defined, but the women's wasn't. I think that if we can define it specifically, that makes life a lot easier for everyone. But the fact that you struggle to define kind of professional, business-like, etc., and what word to use, kind of it suggests what the problem is. You are creating this hierarchy that kind of, there's a part of society that's better and a part that's worse, and we don't want that to happen.
I think for me, you know, what Amy said about that kind of suit and it being defined, I really feel that, because when I wear a suit, and even when I was in primary school and, you know, as a deputy head, if I wore a suit with a tie, I knew I was safe. And taking a step outside of that, as professional as I could look, I always felt a bit nervous, because you're right, there's a lack of definition about what we're talking about. So I guess there's one way is to go really strict and say everyone should wear what is essentially a uniform, a professional looking, our stereotypical imagination of what a professional uniform is. Amy, what are your thoughts on, I guess, the fine end of it, where we are having to tell staff off, I guess, or sending them home, you know, and in this example, sacking a member of staff because they won't wear a suit. Is it that serious?
Well, I think we have to think about the place that we're working at. So when we go for a job interview, we see what's around us. We have a contract. If our contract, I don't know if it includes dress code, but if the staff handbook says dress code, if you are going to be employed by that school, you are adhering to it. So I guess if you want to be more casual and more informal, there are obviously schools out there that are like that. So I think you just have to find the best school for you. I know some people might disagree with that, but I think there are rules. And if a school wants to define that you have to wear a suit, and you go for an interview, you accept the job, you are there for expecting that you're going to wear a suit. If you don't want to, in my opinion, I think you should work somewhere elsewhere. And there are schools, there are all different types of schools out there. I mean, there are schools where teachers are called by their first name. If you want that, you know, you need to find a school where that's appropriate. So I think having a dress code is absolutely crucial for that school's ethos. If they want to set business wear, I think that's within their remit. I do worry about the sending home of a member of staff. I wonder, was the dress code changed? Because that might be different. So if you think you're going to a school where it's a bit more loose and then they change it, then I guess that's a different conversation. And I do think it is problematic to send a member of staff home for that. I do wonder whether there were their conversations had. I don't really know the context behind that, but I think we should be adhering to the dress code of our school.
I think, you know, as I was a deputy head, you know, I'm not currently in my current role a line manager in that same way, but I think I would find it really hard to have conversations with people. And I know, Adam, you said that you'd had people had to speak to you to kind of impart that there had been comments made, but it must be, I guess, an incredibly difficult conversation to have that someone is making those comments. And I can understand, I guess, when we talk about the professionalism element of it, but I keep coming back to this idea that some people or in some styles, and I think it kind of ties into Adam saying having different role models in different styles, some you can look smart. And what would I be saying to, I guess, a member of staff who had a suit on, but, you know, looked scruffy in a suit? Is it the suit? Is it the tie? Or is it the manner in which they are presenting and wearing it that is professional, would be my question. Adam, how do you feel about them?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, first of all, I just want to say I do agree with Amy. When you accept a job, you accept the kind of dress code that is in place in whichever staff handbook you get. And I think it's important, if you kind of don't agree with it, it's important that you start those conversations, that you kind of, you take that initiative to say, well, actually, I feel a little bit comfortable with this, or I want to improve this or change this. Because a lot of the time when you go to SLT, they are very open. They do want to hear your kind of feedback. They want to know what you're saying. So I think it is important to raise those points. I think, and I'll use my brother for an example here, and he'll hate me for it, but he, as my mum would say, looks like a sack of spuds no matter what he's wearing. So he could be in the most expensive suit and tie ever. He could be wearing T-shirt and jeans. He will look the same level of formal because of the way he carries himself and the way he looks. So I think sometimes it is the person, and it is kind of the impression that they give off. And I think we are all professionals as teachers, every single one of us. But I think sometimes we should be conscious of the way we carry ourselves. We should model ourselves in a way that is kind of holding correct posture if we can, kind of making sure that we've got a smile on our face if we want to be that welcoming person, kind of modelling the behaviours we'd expect modelled back to us. And I think that's what makes you a professional rather than necessarily the clothes that you wear. I think if you carry yourself in a certain way, you will give off that you're a professional more than if you were, say, slumped and looking a bit rough around the edges in a suit. I think it totally depends on the way you present yourself to the world.
Now, Amy, you were kind of talking about the difficulties of it and those kind of blurred lines. You know, would you favour a more, I guess, defined approach where it was kind of fairly black and white of, you know, it's a tie and it's a jacket for a man, for a lady, it's a this, this or this? Or do you think there is the option for people to, you know, we are professionals, we keep saying that word, to make a professional judgment about what looks smart?
I think it's very difficult if you just leave it to to somebody's judgment, because everybody's different. One person might think jogging bottoms is smart. So I definitely think it sounds ridiculous, but even just having a selection of photos of items of clothing, you know, like a woman could wear a smart dress, but she could also wear a skirt suit or a trouser suit or nice smart pair of trousers with a shirt. I think having really specific guidelines, but with lots of options, I think would work rather than leaving it open. Because I think if you leave it open, you know, there will be people that will, I wouldn't say abuse it, but maybe they don't understand what's expected. And I think it's difficult for men, I think, just because they have to be so smart in their suits. If we then don't have smart women as well, I do wonder what the impact is on the children in looking at men and women and the importance they place on those people, you know, whether they think, oh, men are more important because they're always smart, whereas women aren't, because sometimes they are, sometimes they're not.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the comments, in the texts and the tweets that we've had in, there have been the occasional comment about a disparity between men and women and expectations. And this is something that I think, you know, Adam talked about with his, when, you know, he was talking about redoing the dress code. The only expectations that there are legally, and your employer, you know, and obviously take union advice, seek professional advice. I'm not an expert on this, but my research so far for the show suggested that the only real laws around it were it couldn't be discriminatory. It should be the same expectation on men and women. So you wouldn't be able to say that women could wear earrings, but men couldn't, you know. So same expectation on both genders, not discriminatory. And really, that was about it as far as your legal defense to go. So, you know, if I wanted to argue with my employer about what they could wear. Now, the only place that I feel I've seen, you know, a simplicity of that would be in very, very early year settings, where I've seen them wearing or I guess PE departments in a secondary school, where you get a uniform, you get, you know, a polo shirt that has the brand on it. Would that simplify things, or are, you know, do we lose something if I at my school decide to say, actually, do you know what, you're all wearing branded polo shirts? Adam, how would you feel about that?
I suppose the first thing I want to say is, when we changed our dress code, we made it all staff, so that all staff had the same expectations. Because if you define it as male or female, that's, you're establishing this binary that millions of people don't adhere to. So like, I wore a jumpsuit, for example, one day for school. I made sure that in certain areas, due to my male anatomy, it wasn't gathered so that it was appropriate for work. But if you kind of set this idea of male and female, you then set this idea of anyone that doesn't necessarily comfortably fit into either of those, therefore is in this weird, ambiguous grey area. But in terms of, if I was given a polo shirt with the school's branding on, I would be happy to wear it, because I do think it would make things a lot simpler. But I think it also takes a lot of the joy out of what we do. So, for example, I know one of my colleagues on Twitter sent you a copy of me in a gold, shiny sequin suit.
Yes.
And now I wear that for the children because they absolutely love it. They feel really happy. They get really excited over it. And then once that excitement's died down, they kind of realize, oh, actually, I can, when I'm of a certain age and certain maturity, and when I'm out buying my own clothes or living my own life, I can express myself the way I want to. And it just brings joy to the children. And I think we might lose that aspect of it, seeing the kind of smiley faces. So I know if I wear something a bit more traditionally professional for a man, because I would always say I'm dressed professionally, it may just be more slightly leaning towards the female side of the fashion. But they'll be like, Mr. Levick, this is really boring. Why are you wearing that? Like, you've got grey trousers and a shirt on. That's rubbish. So they kind of have this active involvement now in what I wear, especially my socks. They're obsessed with kind of the bright socks or the funky socks. So I think, especially in primary schools, if we kind of standardised it across the board, you'd lose that kind of spark and excitement that a lot of children generate from just seeing you as an actual person and not just someone who is in a uniform just like they are.
Amy, how would you feel about that? You know, when I define a staff uniform, so, you know, we, you know, like you would get as a, you know, if you worked on an airplane, you know, a staff uniform, how would you feel about that?
So first, I just want to touch on what Adam said. I definitely agree with you in terms of male and female. Yes, we should have options that anyone can wear. So obviously, if a man wanted to come in a smart dress, I think absolutely, if they wanted to, that's fine. Equally skirts and so on. Just wanted to address that first, because I do agree. It shouldn't be gendered. I personally think that I would love to have a uniform. I had this just before I knew I was coming on today. I spoke to four of my female colleagues and I sort of asked them about the policy. And they said that they felt that women were disadvantaged in terms of our dress code, because a man could wear, they could have two suits and a man could have two white shirts and they could rotate that and nobody would notice. However, with women, they were sort of saying, for example, I wore a dress today, and they said, I suppose if you wore that dress every day this week, then maybe we would notice it and maybe the kids would be like, oh, Miss Jordan's wearing the same dress. So personally, in terms of my finances, it would be great to just have school branded kit. But I do agree with Adam in that then will limit my individuality. But, you know, maybe perhaps you could still wear your bright, colourful socks with that branded kit, and you could wear your own shoes and have your own hairstyle. So, yeah, I think in principle, I'd agree with having branded clothing. That'd be easier for me. But the individuality factor is something to consider.
Certainly. You know, I really was against the idea until I said airplanes. And then I imagined a kind of, you know, pilot type outfit. And I was kind of like, actually, they do look smart. They do look professional. They are trusted. I kind of swung myself a little bit. But you're right. I fall back to primary school. And I think whether it's subject specific for me as well in my head, that I think that the personality of a teacher, and I am one of those teachers who believe that relationships are important in what we do, that, you know, it is a way that we express who we are and they get to know us as individuals, and they have to see a, you know, a variety of people. And as a male in primary, I thought that was important too. Dorian's just texting saying, PE teacher's not involved in this conversation, always wear school uniform. Yeah, I was thinking that myself, Dorian. I often do see PE staff and I would say often early years teachers and early years teams as well, or nurseries teams if your school have one, often tend to have sometimes have a polo shirt type thing. Now, what we have is one more ad break. And when we come back, Amy and Adam, I think we will lighten the mood slightly and we will have our kind of pet peeves and hates and any mishaps for clothing to end on a lighter note rather than, you know, clothing should be joyful. And, you know, we are talking about expressing ourselves. So when we come back, we will lighten the mood. Is that okay, Adam? You're happy to stay with us? And Amy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lovely. So we'll see you both on the other side of these adverts.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics.
Well, welcome back. Croeso I Abertawe, welcome to Swansea. We're back and we're talking to Adam and Amy and we're talking about school dress codes. Now, we've just had a message in from Lucy Brown 81 saying that she had to wear a uniform for a year whilst teaching in Indonesia. It was uncomfortable, restrictive, made me feel like I was in prison. All teaching staff were told they had to tie their hair up in the same way, so no elements of personality at all. I think I would have really found that difficult. But that is an amazing kind of, I guess there are, you know, such different expectations, particularly around the world on this. Now, we were going to finish off by talking about pet peeves and hates. And I will start us off with, I have said I'm all for individuality. I am all for expression of themselves. I think I do still sit at secondary school, particularly definitely in sixth form, that, you know, there is a place for a suit and tie, particularly if you work in a catchment that maybe doesn't see that often. And, you know, but my pet peeve, and I would, you know, send someone home for, dismiss them immediately, would be a teacher wearing odd socks. That is it. I'm sorry. You know, that for me is such a, I can't, the OCD in me goes crazy. Adam, any fashion faux pas for a teacher you think, actually, do you know what? You've told us everything should be free, something you'd ban.
Well, first of all, I wear odd socks quite a lot to work.
No.
Oh. So I'll wear like a blue one and a green one together or things like that. I think my biggest pet peeve is ridiculously oversized earrings. I just think they are so dangerous. They're so unnecessary. And a lot of the times, they don't look as nice as like a little one, in my opinion.
Oh, so half, you started on health and safety there and then you pivoted to... actually, they don't look good at the end there. So, you know, I'm gonna weigh up whether you're actually making an argument for health and safety with a fashion element, or they look bad and you're just backing up with a health and safety argument.
I mean, we've all got to have some form of argument to fall back on.
Yeah. Amy, pet peeves, fashion hates, fashion faux pas for teachers.
Well, firstly, I'm just going to address Adam. I'm so pleased we're not on video call because I have massive earrings on and I love them.
It's okay. We've managed. I insulted Adam with the odd socks and he's now insulted you. So, you know, we're going round robin on this one.
So my pet peeve is a wrinkled shirt. Yeah, I hate seeing people with wrinkled shirts. I think, come on, at least just iron. If you're going to wear a shirt, at least iron it.
Yeah, I would have that. That for me falls into that category. I think, you know, if you're going to wear a suit, you know, the point is to look smart. You know, it's that's where you fall into, like, you know, the kids at school who are, you know, only just following the rules. Oh, you know, I'm not chewing gum, I'm chewing a rubber. You know, it's the same thing for me with that. With I'm wearing a suit, it looks terrible, but I'm wearing a suit. Yeah, I wouldn't have that. Fashion mishaps, and we had a lot of them in, and I'd be interested to hear your opinions on this. Pretty much every person who messaged in saying that they'd had a mishap at school, they often talk about splitting and ripping, said they were stapling clothes back together. I certainly have stapled clothes back together, even knowing that I had needles and thread in a school. We were a primary school, we had sewing stuff. Adam, have you heard of people stapling clothes back together? In fact, you know, fashion mishaps, clothing mishaps.
Yep, in fact, I've done it myself. So I was teaching and I bent down to help someone with their work and I just heard a massive rip and realised that my trousers had ripped. And I sent my TA to get a needle and thread and I tried to sew it in the bathroom, wouldn't sew. The fabric had properly broken. So we had to get a staple, pinch it together and staple it. And I accidentally stapled it into my unironed shirt.
Oh, wait, unironed shirts as well. Oh, dear.
Yep.
Amy, science as well, you are. Actually, clothing must play quite a health and safety role, I guess, in that, and hair and things possibly. Is it, you know, are there horror stories of ties going up in flames that you have for us?
no ties going up in flames. I mean, I have come home and found my tights with like lots of small speckles, some holes in them, and obviously some, you know, maybe an acid got down them. But nothing dramatic. I'm sorry to burst your bubble there.
For me,
mostly tights.
Acid burning through your clothes is quite dramatic. I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
But actually, you know, that's far more extreme than me and Adam stapling our split clothes back together. The worst thing I ever did, and I will say this to anyone listening, and it was mentioned in one of the kind of test articles, was about compartmentalizing your clothes. And I made the worst mistake ever as a trainee teacher. I had, you know, just gotten to teach training, so proud of myself, smart suit, silk tie, spent too much on the tie, leant over and got Tippex on it, and it wouldn't come out. And so my top tip for everyone as we leave the show, and I'll ask you if you have any tips on clothing or any final thoughts, but my top tip is don't spend too much on your work clothes, particularly if you're a primary school teacher who's going to be on your knees and going to be leaning over paint trays. Don't buy a silk tie. That's my top tip on clothing for teachers. Adam, any last words?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for having me would probably be my first last word. Top tips wise, I would say if you're teaching primary school, dress for the environment, wear trousers that you can actively move around in easier, and invest in a good pair of shoes that you know will last because you are on your feet all the time, running around left, right and centre.
Fabulous. And Amy, any final thoughts or comments from you?
I agree in terms of the shoes. Women, do not do it. Do not wear massive heels. It's not worth it. Get some nice flat shoes that look nice. And also, if you are a science teacher, wear your lab coat. Just wear a lab coat over your clothing so that stops any acid burns.
Fabulous. Now, thank you so much for coming on. And we got light, we got dark. It's been a lovely conversation to have with you. I am going to finish this off just before we play the outro out with my favorite comment from the show. And that was from Adam, that your dress code should match your mission statement. And that is the big takeaway from me for this. Your dress code should match your mission statement. So thank you very much, Adam.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you very much, Amy.
Thank you so much.
And a goodbye, everyone. There are more shows to come here on TT Radio. But from me here in Swansea, Nostar, good night.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.